B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Tuesday, April 9th, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll get the latest in esports news from over at the news desk with Sarah Skopic, plus Joe and Norris bring us more exciting interviews from the NAB show in Las Vegas. Those discussions are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic, actually at a real news desk.
Upgrade.
And get a gaming news update.
Gaming news update with Sarah Skopic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
Since Borderlands 3 was announced at PAX East, fans have been clamoring for a release date. We thought we'd have to wait till E3 this year to find out when we get our hands on it. Gearbox has answered our prayers and given us not one, but two release dates. On September 13th, it'll be available for PS4, Xbox One, and the Epic Store. 6 months later, in April of 2020, the rest of the PC world will get its access.
You know, I have to find that. Like, I was originally upset about this, but after really thinking about it and kind of doing some deep soul searching,
yeah,
and really, like, just letting go of my outrage, just like,
well, because send yourself back, you know, quite a few years during the console wars when there was,
right,
when there was an exclusive, that means you never got to play it, well, depending on what side you were,
because
on.
It there was a cost prohibitive
of hundreds of dollars
aspect to it, right? Like, yeah, you had to drop like $500-$600 to
as
be
a
able
student,
yeah, to be able to you know, get in on that console exclusive, and this is just not the same thing. All it takes is just a couple of megs of hard, you know, like
one time
hard
one
drive
time,
space.
By the way.
Yeah, one time, and that's it. That, like, that's all you got to do.
So,
like, it's
so
not the same thing.
So why are people losing their minds over it and downvoting or review bombing Borderlands 2 into the ground?
Oh, because we can't have anything nice. Because gamers have to be upset about something. Like, you know, Kevin Hart was actually just talking about this. It's not cool to be genuinely enthusiastic about something anymore, right? Like, everyone's just got to be pissed about things all the time.
Yeah, of course.
25-year-old man in Japan was arrested after sending death threats to Square Enix after spending over 200,000 yen in gacha games, roughly $1,800. The unidentified man said he hadn't gotten the character he wanted after spending the exuberant amount and sent the email as revenge. He was arrested in late March and has confessed to the threats.
Settle down, old man.
Listen,
jeez.
Here's the thing. I know what it is to be that angry at specifically Square Enix. I get it. I understand what that emotion is, but you gotta realize there's a line. There's a line that if you cross it, you're going to jail. Like, you can be as mad, and trust me, I tested this. You can make shows about how terrible Square Enix is. They're not gonna do anything to you. But the minute that you send a threatening note, you're gonna go to jail.
Yeah, I've played one gacha game in my time, Final Fantasy Record Keeper. I'm not going to talk about how much I spent overall, but there were a few times where I spent more than I should have, but in every instance, I did get what I was looking for.
Now,
I never got to that point.
Well, and if you were mad at anyone, you were always mad at yourself and not Square Enix.
It would be myself. It would absolutely be me, 100%.
The Chinese government's ban on games created a massive backlog for Chinese consumers, even though the ban was lifted in December of last year. According to a report by Nico Partners, only 989 games have been seen released in China, with the vast majority of them being the Chinese-produced mobile games. It needs to be restated that Fortnite still has not been released in China.
Let's just pause on that fact for just a second. Like, how do you reach the numerical heights that Fortnite does without having any kind of presence in the Chinese market?
If they ever do, like once they get to that point where the Chinese market gets their hands on Fortnite, what do you think that does for the, like, I mean, do they just explode again?
Oh, I think that, yes, if something that huge comes over to China, it's going to see a second explosion in popularity.
Wow.
And marketability.
I can't even imagine.
And monetization. I know. Epic's going to be rolling in money, but that's assuming that it's able to get through whatever process the Chinese government has come up with to be able to release or designate games for release in China.
Well, and it should be noted, too, that there is actually a Fortnite knockoff called, what is it?
Fortcraft.
Yeah,
Fortcraft. Which is better title,
you're
actually.
You're not even trying. Fortcraft? Come on.
That's a better explanation than Fortnite, I'll tell you that much. Some troubling news out the Pokemon YouTube community. Allegations have begun to resurface of sexual predation against young viewers and community members by four different content creators. The most well-known, Kyle the King Nappy McNeil, has over 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. Others accused include Mudkip Mama, Nathan Decadur Putnam, and Mizumi. 12 alleged victims have come forward with claims thus far.
Now, this is really terrible. I mean, we saw stories about this from some content creators back, in the ailing days of Minecraft content creation. And there's always something about, you know, like, when you're creating content for what you know is a very young community, you really have to watch your behavior on all levels, especially when it comes to how you interact with the people who follow you. And to hear stories like this is just sickening.
Yeah, no, it's definitely terrible. And, you know, as gaming culture in general, you know, gets bigger and bigger and bigger and gets more accepted in the mainstream, you're going to see stories like this coming to light because they are out there. And I personally have to really give it to Kotaku. You know, they've been breaking a lot of these stories recently. And as terrible as they are to read, they absolutely need to be put out there.
It's important to tell them, yeah.
One of the more interesting aspects of Fortnite's map is how it changes and evolves from season to season. Back in Season 4, when the meteor hit Dusty Depot, it turned into a crater now called Dusty Divot. It has Easter eggs hidden throughout it, as well as dinosaur bones and other relics. As players destroyed these for loot, they stopped appearing, and after the final one was destroyed, lava began to fill the Dusty Divot.
Say what you will about Fortnite, this always intrigues me so much, the way that they're constantly evolving their map.
It's fantastic. I think it's a brilliant idea. In lieu of making other maps for that game, you got to do something. And I think that this is a really interesting experiment in ongoing game design. And I think that, you know, like, other games should learn from this. I think that this is just a wonderful idea.
Netflix has confirmed the main cast for their adaptation of Cowboy Bebop. John Cho has been cast as lead Spike Spiegel, better known for his role as Sulu in Star Trek movies. Mustafa Shakir, who played Bushmaster in Luke Cage, will portray Jet Black. And Daniela Panetta from Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom will play Faye. Finally, playing the major antagonist will be Alex Hassel as Vicious.
I can't come up with a problem in this casting.
Yeah, I mean, I personally never seen Cowboy Bebop yet, but when I look at who they have, like, they're all pretty spot on.
That's an entirely different conversation that you haven't seen Cowboy Bebop yet, but we don't have time to get into it.
Since its original announcement back in 2015, the fabled Final Fantasy VII Remake has had little news and even more rumors surrounding it. Headed by Tetsuya Nomura, many fans are skeptical about the development process. But Nomura now has a co-director, Naoki Hamaguchi. Formerly, the development lead has been made a co-director of the project. Previously, he's worked on Final Fantasy XII as a real-time renderer, Final Fantasy XIII as lead event programmer, and project leader on Mobius Final Fantasy.
I guess it's good that Nomura's getting any help that he can get. It seems like he can't get it across the finish line on his own.
It can't be any worse.
And that's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. We talked at length on this show about the various business practices of the gaming industry. Our own government has started to look into loot boxes, and Belgium even went so far as to ban them. It doesn't stop there, as the United Kingdom's Competition and Markets Authority is now investigating Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo. Robbie, what's going on here?
Right, so the CMA, as they're called, is basically launching a consumer law investigation, you know, looking at those three in particular, and basically wondering if you know, when it comes to things like their online content policies, auto renewals, their game contracts, refunds, stuff like that, basically if it's fair for the consumer. You know, personally, I don't know what they're necessarily going to find in this regard. I think for the most part, those three companies are pretty decent in that realm. And I think recently, Sony actually went so far as to amend some of their digital refund policies in the wake probably of Fallout 76 and I think Anthem most recently.
Yep.
But the fact that these entities now are starting to sort of flip up rocks and look in different places, I think bodes well for us as consumers, regardless of what they find.
I have to agree with you, Robbie. I do think that this is a step in the right direction for consumer protection, specifically because gamers haven't had much consumer protection over the last 10 years, as organizations like this have fundamentally misunderstood the market and what kind of protections needed to be put into place.
Yep.
I've seen a lot of people raising alarm bells about this. I think that that is highly premature. I think you have way more to be concerned about in the FTC's investigation of loot boxes. But I think that, you know, consumer protection agencies need to be there and need to be advocating for, you know, the small guy like us who are just out there buying products, and we want those products to, you know, work, be fair, and if they don't work, to be able to get our money back. I think that these are all reasonable expectations.
Yeah, and the same day that the CMA made these announcements, the European Commission also criticized Valve and five other publishers of geo-locking certain PC titles that certain countries didn't have access to them.
Well, now that is completely different, because now we're starting to see a pastiche of laws when it comes to video games in different countries. You know, we mentioned Belgium in that opening. They banned loot boxes outright. Mm-hmm. So you do have to do some kind of geo-locking in order to protect yourself as a game developer. So I think that that's a little bit off base, but everything else here I see is incredibly on target. But listen, we want to hear from you. Do things like this concern you? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we had the chance to sit down with Mikola Adesanyi once again, this time to talk about Face It. Stick around, that conversation is ahead in about 15 minutes here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we'll check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk.
Oh, epic. How did you screw over your pro players this time?
Esports news is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, Joe and Nora sat down with Matt Edelman, COO of Super League Gaming, as well as co-founder of Face It, Mikola Adesanyi. Those conversations are ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get an esports gaming update.
Oh my god! Oh, it's over! It's over! He did it!
Ready for the dive! In from the Evers! Into the
faster! Oh, and another one! Oh, and a third! What is this?
Esports gaming update with Sarah Skopic.
Epic is once again finding new ways to frustrate their professional player base. This time, they've gone and banned stretched resolutions for upcoming tournaments. Some pros, even Ninja, have taken to using 4:3 or even 5:3 ratios. It's split in the player base on whether this will actually give you an edge or not. Some argue it makes the hitboxes bigger, some pointing out you do have a higher vertical field of view. Regardless of which side you're on, everyone seems upset the change comes so close to another tournament.
And that's, I think, really the key here, is that it's coming so close to such a visible and high stakes tournament.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I think I we've been very clear about this. Epic has really not done a good job when it comes to making sure that the competitive environment is fair to its pre-existing pros. And that's just such a frustrating move from a game that's as nuclear hot as Fortnite.
Well, and you know, I almost want to feel bad for Epic in this case, because with this here, this isn't just like a change, you know, a random new change or update to game mechanics, adding something new into the game. This is something that on its face, like, you know, putting your screen at weird, like,
a stretch resolution,
carnival looking mirror type things that gives you a higher field of view. I agree. Definitely fix that. But when you have the history that Epic has of doing it, like you said, right up against some huge tournament, it's not a good look.
Yeah.
Despite not having a solid grasp on what it wants from its esports scene, Fortnite held a warm-up tournament this past weekend in preparation for the World Cup qualifiers. Even though it may not be as polished as the OWL or the LCS, they still have more money than they know what to do with. This warm-up tournament has a prize pool of $500,000. 500th place in each region will take home $200, and first place, $4,500.
Okay.
A warm-up tournament! That's literally all it's called, too!
I get it. Like, it's very frustrating to see a professional esports scene in such disarray. Here's the thing, though, is what I like about this, and I'm struggling to dig out nuggets that I like, but what I like about this is that it goes all the way to 500th place,
because
right?
Because they throw so much money at it.
Right, yeah, exactly. They have the ability to do that, but I think, you know, when you hear someone like Hungrybox talk about how psychologically positive it was for him to go to an esports tournament and get something tangible out of it. Mm-hmm. I think that that's going to be really important for esports, capital E, capital S sports, to grow as a whole.
Staying on the Fortnite train for one more story, reboot vans are now coming to the game. Just like in Apex Legends, when a squadmate dies, they will drop a reboot card that allows you to respawn them at one of these vans. Unlike Apex, when respawning, other players will be alerted to the respawn, as well as how many people are being respawned.
Listen, so when Epic does this with most of its features, it feels like a tongue-in-cheek sort of like adaptation of it. This just seems like they really just ripped this off right from Apex.
Credit
to Epic. It's not clever at all.
Credit to Epic, though, for letting their game evolve and putting, you know, sort of what the game needs, like the ping system. Sure, that's something that probably every Battle Royale game should have, but the reboot vans, you maybe should have reconsidered.
Nah, I don't think that that's a good move.
Former Dead or Alive Ultimate player Tomoyuki Inui was arrested for burglary in late February. Authorities allege that Inui broke into the home of an 84-year-old woman and stole 2.6 million yen, which is roughly $23,000 in cash.
What an idiot.
Unacceptable!
Inui also allegedly stated that with his gaming activity diminishing, this was the best way to cover living expenses, and that he's committed over 100 burglaries over the past 3 years.
Wow.
100 burglaries in the last 3 years.
I feel like that classifies this guy as a cat burglar now.
Yes, I think technically, but like, get good, bro. Like, honestly, if you're struggling at your gaming endeavors and now you gotta go to robbery for the other... What? You the Wayne Kramer of the... Of the esports world? What's happening here?
He's obviously started to maybe age out of his skill, right? But the thing is, if this is what you need to do to sort of keep up your lifestyle, maybe you need to bump that lifestyle down a little bit.
Yeah, maybe make some adjustments in the way that you're consuming things. I mean, just stop going through money at that kind of rate.
Nintendo has confirmed that the team-based Super Smash Bros. Ultimate World Championship 2019 3v3 and the Splatoon 2 World Championship 2019 tournaments would return to E3 this year. Both these events made a big splash recently at PAX East, specifically because the Smash tournament allowed the use of some items, including Smash Balls. While pros have been scoffing at the choice, Nintendo says it's not meant to comment on the pro scene, but rather to lure in a broader audience who may be used to online play rules.
I'm still gonna end up mimicking Hungry Box here. Listen, it's fun as a one-off, but you can't form the foundation of your esports scene by doing goofy stuff by having items in there.
I do agree with you, and honestly, I think that right now Nintendo has a big opportunity. With Sony starting to vacate E3, last year they shared the same auditorium space with Sony, right?
Yeah.
If Nintendo decided to expand their influence to include more sort of esports stuff. You know, imagine Shore having this sort of, you know, little fun one-off type stuff where, you know, the general audience can kind of jump in play. And then also having your pro tournament as well. I think that they could make a real statement at E3.
The semifinals for the spring split of the LCS are in the books. The action got underway last Saturday with one of the greatest rivalries in League of Legends, TSM versus Cloud9. While Cloud9 stormed out to a 2-0 lead in the series, Team SoloMid powered back and completed the reverse sweep.
Wow.
Then on Sunday, whoa, Team Liquid wanted to erase any doubt about just how good they were. They handled FlyQuest in dominant fashion, sending them home after a 3-0 sweep. This weekend, Team Liquid will face TSM for the spring split championship. For those who think it'll be one-sided, remember, TSM is 2-0 against Liquid this season.
This will be an interesting matchup. I'm excited to watch this.
After the first week of Stage 2 in the Overwatch League closes, some people are lamenting that the 3-tank, 3-healer comp known as GOATS is still being used. But for those who watched more than a single map, you'll see other comps have started to emerge as well. The Bastion-centric Bunker comp saw some play. Comps sporting 3 DPS players were also very common. In fact, in the final game of the week, with the Washington Justice playing the Chengdu's Hunters, a new record for most heroes played, for a minimum of 1 minute, was set with 27 heroes. Ash, Roadhog, and Reaper were the only ones not playing.
This is so great. I think what you're finally starting to see now is that teams are going to start playing what they feel most confident themselves playing, instead of feeling like they have to be beholden to what the one end all be all composition is.
Yeah, this statistic surprised me. I did not realize that Ashe had not been played yet.
In that match.
Yes.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Esports Gaming Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. We're always looking to highlight new esports endeavors on this show, from the pro scene to the grassroots, from college to the Little League. You heard right. A Boys and Girls Club in California is starting up an esports Little League. Robbie, what's the deal here?
You know, we've actually talked before about the idea of you know, putting kids, a you know, elementary age in sort of a setting for this, and what sort of lessons you could pull from it. And I think what they're doing here is great, because the game that they've chosen to use is actually Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. Something that, first of all, is age appropriate for anyone who wants to, you know, get in on the action. But what's great about this too is that, you know, when it comes down to just 1v1s, you have a single goal, and that's just to play against the other person. You know, this means at young ages you can start to foster sportsmanship and really start to sort of break down some of the you know, the finer points of the game as well. And for anyone who's worried about, you know, kids that young, you know, being put into like some type of stressful regimen, it's going to be a single practice and a single match each week, and it goes for 8 weeks.
I think that this is amazing. This is a great way to funnel kids who have a natural interest in wanting to be good and competitive at video games into a program that will help foster that. And, you know, we talk about the physical development of children and not wanting to impact that with too much wear and tear, like with football or,
right,
you know, with other very physical sports. This is such a great way to teach concepts like teamwork and leadership and all of those things that kind of come along naturally with sports to kids at a young age without damaging their bodies.
Yeah, there's actually a really great quote that I read too from Joel Carlson of Bravest Youth Esports, who's one of the organizations helping to put this on, who, you know, had mentioned in traditional sports you have physical limitations and you even have a finite number of slots for people to play, but mentioned, sure, when it comes to esports,
it's infinite.
There's no benches.
That's absolutely
everybody
right.
Everybody gets to play.
Sarah, you work with kids. What do you think about this?
I do. I'm really excited about this opportunity because I tell you what, kids still, even though video games are very normalized, still feel that like adults don't get it and are very shocked to hear that it's even normalized in that fashion. And so I think this is a great way to, even for parents, to kind of see it more normalized and even just more opportunities, especially for kids who aren't necessarily physically able to play sports. And so we really get a lot more involvement here.
Yeah. And you know, it kind of makes me me wonder how many of those little kids are really even aware of the opportunities in esports. You know, you're right. At
this age, they just want to have fun.
The assumption is that grown-ups are not going to be into it. Mm-hmm. But there is, as we demonstrate, an entire swath of grown-ups that would be super into it. But listen, we want to hear from you. Do you think Little League esports is a good idea? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP, we'll check in with Norris and Joe, who are on the scene out at NAB 2019. They've got conversations with Mikola Adesanya, co-founder of Face It, and Adam Mayhill, the creative director of the Unity Engine. That's right, Unity. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we'll continue our coverage of the NAB show in Las Vegas by hearing from Matt Edelman, Chief Commercial Officer for Super League Gaming. Stick around. That conversation is ahead next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. Want to thank everyone listening on the sports beat of East Texas, 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, and 100.7 in Henderson, as well as 1250 and 94.5 ESPN San Antonio. Check out our website over at CheckpointXP.com. While you're there, make sure you sign up for the Checkpoint XP Nation newsletter. Get behind-the-scenes insight, photos, and access to contests and unique content. All it takes is an email address and a zip code. So sign up today at CheckpointXP.com. XP.com. With Joe and Norris out in Las Vegas attending the NAB show, they got to meet up and talk with a number of industry folks. Here's their conversation with Matt Edelman, Chief Commercial Officer of Super League Gaming.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. We are out at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Las Vegas, Nevada. Joining us now is Matt Edelman. He's the Chief Commercial Officer for Super League Gaming. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, so we got to ask these questions to everyone who comes through. I've got to know, what is the best video game of all time?
I have to say, just in everything that I've seen, even though I'm not an avid player, I love LOL. I've loved learning about LOL.
After my own heart.
I loved watching, so many folks in our office play. We run experiences for League of Legends players all over the country. And the passion, the strategy, the communication between players
is
fantastic.
Yes, absolutely. So how did you get introduced to esports, like as a concept?
That's a great question. So I've been sort of connected to the media business really my whole career, in and out of video games at different points. Starting back in the 90s when I worked at Marvel, I actually worked on a project that was an interactive comic book on CD-ROMs.
Oh, okay.
So really far back
then. Yeah, okay. Yeah, CD-ROM era.
And that was also when Marvel was starting to license its titles out to mm-hmm. partners like Activision and others. And then more recently, I was at a company named WME-IMG, now named Endeavor.
Okay.
WME-IMG formed a joint venture with Turner to create E-League.
Ah, yes. Okay.
I was on the team that got that off the ground. I was
very
not
cool.
very involved in the ongoing operation once it was sort of set up and running, but that was my baptism by fire and what video games had become and what esports has emerged to be.
Well, and E-League is, of course, a very amazing presentation, and one of the first things that when people think of esports on traditional media, they think, oh, yeah, I've seen it on Turner. It's pretty impressive. So, all time, your favorite gaming memory?
You know, that's unfortunately really easy when you ask a parent, because it's about playing with, you know, with a child for the most part, if you're a gamer. And, you know, my son is now 13. My favorite memory is really a series of memories of playing with him, whether it's Minecraft, Fortnite, Battlefront, even got him to play some traditional sports games like the NHL and FIFA. And it's a regular event in our home every Saturday morning.
That's so awesome. I mean, I came from a family of musicians and former sports athletes. So video games, I was definitely the odd man out in my family playing video games. But that's very cool. So first of all, we got to start with Super League Gaming. Tell us a bit about what you do with Super League Gaming.
Well, Super League Gaming, it's an exciting company that's, you know, still young, but we've been able to make a lot of progress over a few years. We focus on amateur esports experiences and really developing a community of amateur players across the country and soon internationally. The idea is that players of video games watch pro competitors at the highest level and aspire to have a way to play like a pro. There aren't a lot of opportunities to do that in really a structured framework and as part of a community that is enduring over time in either a local venue where you live or digitally with a group of players you begin to trust and in a community that feels like a place you can belong. And that's really what Super League is building across game titles, across cities and towns all over the country, across skill levels, all ages, trying to be, you know, fully inclusive to the amateur gamer that likes to compete.
Well, that does seem to be one of the difficult things about esports, as much as it's growing and expanding, is for a lot of people who aspire to be professional esports players or athletes at some point, that kind of path to the pros remains shrouded in mystery. It's you know, you might think maybe I'll go to college to try to play. That's starting to become an option. So, but it sounds like Super League Gaming can be another, you know, path to the professional scene.
It sure can. I mean, what we really have focused on is that community experience. So if you think of what happens in traditional sports, starting at a young age, you have the opportunity to be part of a community organization that is organizing and running sports experiences locally. And that could be on a field, it could be inside a YMCA. There are a lot of options. Super League is becoming the primary option in the communities where we've activated when it comes to esports. And then it extends all the way into gamers who are out of college in their 20s, 30s, even older, the same way that somebody who's 25, 26 might join a men's softball league or a co-ed soccer league, whatever it happens to be. Super League is the alternative for them to continue gaming competitively.
So, and I do want to talk about this idea of being city-based for a moment. It's one of the things that esports is only just now starting to tap into, is this idea of the city-based community. Obviously, we've got Overwatch League, who has finally kind of tapped into that regionalization idea. You guys have, I mean, kind of before anyone, figured out that people love representing their city. They love representing where they're from and rooting for the team that plays in their city.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a great point, and I appreciate you acknowledging that we were the first ones to do it. We've had our city-based clubs for more than 2 years. We recognize the enthusiasm that a player has in any sport in being part of something from their hometown and rooting for their hometown, taking pride in their local team, and that's really something that we're extending as widely as possible across the U.S. and later this year internationally. So we're big believers in that local affinity.
So, Matt, I do have a quick question. Is that a lot of times we talk about community, we talk about the grassroots, and you see a lot of big corporations and big money now getting involved in esports. How does Super League strike that balance between making sure that they're involved in the grassroots and getting those big communities to come in and feel a part of the entire process without sort of making it feel like, for lack of a better term, too corporate?
That's a great question. And on the one hand, it's such an exciting time for esports companies in general. So many brands that are not native and endemic to video games and esports are starting to enter the space and prioritizing gamers as an important consumer segment they want to reach and they want to have be interested in their products and their services. The most important part of those activations and those partnerships is really about doing whatever you can to enhance the player experience. If you focus on the player, Super League is committed to being a player-first company. So when we bring a partner on board, we want to make the player experience better, whether that's at home, whether that's in a venue, whether that's the prizing, whether that's the content, whatever it is, it's about the player experience. And if we can keep true to that, we think it will remain authentic and exciting and not feel overly commercialized.
So currently you guys have four games, League of Legends, Clash Royale, Fortnite, and Minecraft. And I'm going to get on more on that in a sec, but I do have to start with competitive Minecraft, because us older people look at Minecraft and go, how does that work? But I know, of course, the younger demographic says absolutely. So can you tell us a little bit about competitive Minecraft?
Sure. You know, Minecraft by nature is built to be a game that can be enjoyed on a number of levels. Really,
it's Legos. It's what you make of it.
Yeah, it's what you make of it. Great way to say it. And what a number of businesses have done, Super League included, we've created competitive mini games. So game modes that leverage what you can create in Minecraft because it is an open environment, and then using those game modes to establish the competitive experience. So we have a series of proprietary game modes. We bring players into a venue, a movie theater, etc., and we create a competitive structure around multiple game modes during that event. And we're able to have players in one location, a movie theater in Las Vegas, for example, playing against players in a movie theater in Los Angeles.
Right.
And we create a scoring mechanism and visualization to make spectating interesting for the parents who are in attendance and for the kids who might get knocked out early in a given round. And we build the competitive experience really to be similar to what they'll experience as they graduate beyond Minecraft into other games like League of Legends, where competition is part of the everyday experience of the game.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's analogous to T-ball or where people start when they're trying to learn how to play baseball. You learn the fundamentals of esports, communication and performing on a stage and things like that in games like Minecraft. And then, like you say, when it's time to graduate and move on to maybe more complex games like League of Legends, the players have the context for the skills that they'll need.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we see great demonstrations of teamwork. We see different players start to become leaders on their team. We see them in between rounds enjoying strategy sessions and talking about who they have to target as another team in order to win the next round. We also see the camaraderie and the friendships that develop. There are players who have met in Super League events who now spend time hanging out as friends on weekends. Their parents bring them together because they met in our esports league. Exactly what happens in traditional recreational sports,
yes,
whether it's Little League or AYSO, and both at the youth level and at the adult level. We have players who are part of our League of Legends communities who have met and gotten married, who have met and become roommates, who have met and formed permanent teams,
right,
that they stay with in other League of Legends competitions.
So talking about League of Legends for a moment, typically speaking, Riot Games has played League of Legends esports very close to the chest. They choose to run most of their own stuff. What has it been like getting involved in running League of Legends tournaments?
Well, Riot's been a really terrific partner for us. They were gracious to give us a chance to prove that we could honor their IP and provide good experiences to their community. And we've been able to deliver on that. So they've continued to trust us. And we work very collaboratively in thinking about what programs to bring to the amateur competitive LOL scene. And so, you know, for us, running League of Legends programs has really been about making sure we understand what the players are looking for when they're not otherwise just going to go into solo queue. And a lot of times that has to do with the in-person experience. More than 60% of players in general look forward to playing with others in a physical location outside of their home.
Right.
And we're trying to...
That LAN event, getting to,
yeah,
to be in,
right,
the room, on the stage, competing. Like, it's exciting.
Well, and you learn more about the game when you're playing together with others.
Right.
Skill progression occurs faster. When you find people you want to play with, you end up playing the game more often. And so it really feeds the enthusiasm that players have by running these events in a way that is exemplary to what you know, I think Riot would want to see more of their players enjoying through partners like Super League.
So last question, more and more we're seeing esports beginning to appear in places like high schools. We're seeing high schools adopt a varsity model. We're seeing colleges offer scholarships. What advice do you offer to maybe a parent out there whose kid has said, you know what, I want to try to be competitive in esports and video games, and the parents wondering, like, oh, okay, what does that mean? Like, what advice can you offer?
Well, it's advice that I have to take personally, because, again, my son, I'm not sure that he's going to try to get on a high school team or a college team, but he loves playing video games. He loves competing. He loves the thrill of victory. He loves learning. And what I would say to parents is try to think of esports as a legitimate sport. Think of the ability to bring your child or to encourage your child to leave the home and participate in esports experiences as actually an antidote to too much screen time. Because when you go play together in person with other gamers, it is a social experience.
Yes.
And you are learning all of the skills we just talked about. Communication skills, teamwork, leadership. There is a high propensity of avid video gamers going into STEM educational programs and choosing to major in engineering. There's a higher graduation rate at the college level for gamers than there is for non-gamers, broadly defined. 30% of avid gamers are women. So there are an inordinate number of reasons. There are ample reasons for a parent to encourage that behavior. And at the same time, when children are younger, to use a reasonable filter for how much screen time is too much screen time.
Matt Edelman, Chief Commercial Officer for Super League Gaming, has been our guest here today. Matt, thanks so much for your time, man.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you to Matt Edelman for his time out at the NAB Show in Las Vegas. For full interviews, make sure you visit our website over at CheckpointXP.com. Listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, Unity should be a term that you're familiar with, as it's helped to shape a wide array of games that we all play. We'll speak with Creative Director Adam Mayhill of Unity Technologies to wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, Joe and Norris sit down once again with Mikola Adesani, this time to talk about Face It. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. My name's Nate Bender. I'm hanging out with Robbie Landis here in Detroit. I want to thank everyone listening on the Hawk 1340 in Wenatchee, Washington, as well as the Fan 97.1 in Columbus, Ohio. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the Beepod Network at BeepodStudios.com. For more great listening options, like If You Give a Rick a podcast for kids about the world of children's books, and Nerd Radio for everything from sci-fi to wrestling to all things nerdy in between, go to BeepodStudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery. During our day one coverage of NAB, Joe and Norris got to talk with Mikola Adesani and Todd Klein about how 5G would affect gaming in the future. You can find that interview at our website, CheckpointXP.com. Well, the guys got to catch up with Mikola again on day two to talk to him about his company, Face It.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I'm here with Mikola Adesani of Face It, co-founder of Face It. You guys have heard of Face It. You've used it. I mean, it's a huge, huge platform. McKelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Face It, like, as I said, is a name that we've seen all over the place when it comes to esports. So explain what Face It is to those who are uninitiated.
Yeah.
And how you guys got involved with the esports infrastructure.
Yeah, for sure. So Face It is, first of all, like a platform, a competitive gaming platform, esports platform, where we strive to get all the players to come together and socialize and have a good time and play games together and play competitions together as well. So we really aiming to make it as accessible as possible to really help the development of the grassroots and the gaming communities. Then on top of that, obviously, we have a number of competitions that have higher prizes and more prestige and so on, all the way up to the super professional level, right? So that's where our media division kicks in, and what we do effectively is organize this competition and produce the content and the live events around some of these tournaments, all the way up to, you know, very large scale competitions like the ECS for Counter Strike, the Face It London Major last year, our Universal Open with NBC Sports, most recently with Apex Legends, next week with the Face It Global Summit for PUBG. So yeah, a lot going on.
So speaking of some of the games that you guys are involved in, obviously CSGO, you mentioned Apex, Rocket League, PUBG. What goes into the decision making in terms of what games to actually have on the platform?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Obviously, we tend to focus on games that have competitive aspect built into the game themselves. So that's a big factor. And then obviously we look at a number of other things. Very important for us is the level of community that the game has, and how much we feel like we can bring something to that community, right? So is there a lack of opportunity at grassroots level, for example, and in tournaments and competitions and so on? Is there a lack of communication at the community level? So where we see that there's a need and we can come in and fulfill that need, we will actually do that. And then obviously, last but not least, we're trying to keep up with what was popular, right? So we want to make sure that we can we can be associated and we can support the games that the community wants to play at that specific time.
Well, and on top of that, you've got a personal relationship with Counter-Strike as well, as we've talked about, and so I will forgive you if a little personal sort of affinity for it goes into the decision making well. But you're talking about what's popular and the future. What's different sort of now in esports and how the presentations and the competitions are run, as opposed to when Face It was in its infancy?
Yeah, well, a lot has changed. I would say almost everything has changed. From the games are way more polished and sophisticated now. They actually have esports tools, which is incredible. Looking at what we were doing back in the days to try and compete in some games now, the publishers actually do care about having an esports and building a community for their games, which is fantastic. There's a lot of really good games coming out at all times, it seems like, lately. So that's obviously very exciting for the players. Maybe even a bit overwhelming sometimes,
yeah,
right?
Definitely. Definitely.
Back in the days where when I was playing, we had one big title every couple of years.
Yeah.
And now it feels like we have one big title
every few months,
every other month, right?
Yeah.
And so
Well, speaking of that, you guys got the national PUBG League and stuff that's coming up, and Face It Global Summit is coming up next. Yep. Tell us a little bit about Face It Global Summit and PUBG and the whole ecosystem going around that game.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. We're really excited about this event. PUBG has been obviously a phenomenal success in terms of adoption, and the growth rate of the game has been phenomenal since the launch. But obviously, it took some time to really start building that infrastructure that was needed for esports. And PUBG's core business has been working a lot on that. We obviously been working really closely with them through the integration of the game on our platform to support all the competitions at every level, and then ultimately now leading to the Face It Global Summit. Now, the 2019 is the first first year for the official, you know, PUBG esports.
Yeah.
And it's been like already launched with all these different regional leagues that are being like, you know, really, really interesting to watch and follow with some amazing talent.
Yeah. And like, where does, you know, Faceit sort of fit into that ecosystem as we're beginning to see sort of more regionalization, more, you know, franchise model? You know, where do you guys fit in that ecosystem?
We definitely, you know, at the grassroots level, what we have is pretty unique with our platform, and we feel like, you know, we can play a big role for, you know, most of the esports title in helping, you know, building that community and all those competitions that provide fun, you know, content and engaging and entertainment for the players, and ultimately also for the players that have more aspiration to maybe, you know, become professional and get into bigger and bigger events, provide that opportunity and that avenue and that path, which in the past in esports has always been you know, a bit hard to understand. If I want to really make it into one game, how do I do that? Like, especially even now with this all, like, you know, franchise systems and leagues and so on, it feels like you have this you know, cool guys right at the top, and you can't really, you know, reach them.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to, you know, the gap that we're trying to fill. We want to, you know, give everyone an opportunity, a chance to come from the bottom and really, you know, make it to the top of gaming.
And we've been hearing a lot of that from a lot of people that we've been talking to, and it's great to hear somebody from definitely the infrastructural standpoint talk about the ability to make the path from amateur to professional as easy as possible and to provide that infrastructure. So speaking of that, you know, we have a lot of viewers and listeners that really love esports, but it's still just that sort of front end, players, coaches, stuff like that. Speak a little bit to, if you can, speak a little bit to sort of the back end, what goes into and just how important is stuff like tournament organizing and the accountability for prize pools and stuff like that? Because that's also a big issue.
It's a great question. So I think for us, you know, the way we see it is we built Faceit to be, you know, the backbone of the development of this infrastructure of, you know, communities and, you know, from a local level all the way up to the professional level. We invested a tremendous amount of resources into building this technology and this product to really make it as seamless as possible for the players in terms of experience, make it fun for them. They don't have to do a bunch of, like, you know, a million things manually, invite people and create lobbies and, you know, all the sorts of things. We tend to, you know, take care of all of that automatically, which obviously provides a lot of value for the users, for the players, but ultimately provides a lot of value also for people that want to organize this competitions, because that's really what the Faceit platform is about. Like, everyone can come on Faceit, they can create their own, you know, tournaments and competitions and community. We support them with all the technology and the features that we built, and that makes it a lot easier for them to really produce interesting, compelling content for their local communities and the people that gravitate around that. So that this way, effectively, we're leveraging our product and technology to make it more scalable and easy to manage for everyone to come and start their own communities. I've already seen, like, you know, tremendous success with that. So
awesome.
It's actually working.
Awesome. And so we talked about the games that you guys do cover. Just very quickly, you know, you're doing Apex. Apex is the new hot thing. You know, looking at the trajectory of Apex and looking at how many people are getting involved in it, I mean, is it something that you guys feel really has the staying power to stay around, especially when Fortnite, you know, just announces a $100 million tournament and everybody's back playing Fortnite?
Yeah, I mean, there's maybe some overlap for sure, but ultimately it's a bit of a different audience. Like, Fortnite has been doing a phenomenal job of really making the esports market bigger and attracting a lot of new people towards esports, especially like with a younger, you know, demographic, which is great. I think Apex goes into you know, slightly different audience, and well, the reason why I like it personally is that it's a very fast, you know, action pay.
That's why packed, I like it too.
FPS game, right? And I come from Quake, so we talked about it yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's a game that I personally really, really enjoy. Not not just to play, but enjoy watching it. When we played, we produced the Face It T1 Invitational for Apex last week. We had the T1 guys playing from our studio, and I was just amazed, you know, by watching them. I also realized that, you know, I'm too old to really keep up with the skill level this you know younger generations have playing these games, but I you know I have a lot of fun with it, so I think that's the key part. Like sometimes we forget about how important that is. Ultimately, you know, we're playing games, right? So if the game is not fun and not engaging and entertaining, it's gonna be really hard to build an esports out of it.
That's true.
They have the right ingredients, and then you know I've been spending time with them with EA. Talking with them about, you know, the plans and how to see the future and so on, and I really like the way they're approaching this, and I think they have some solid things they're working on, so yeah, I'm definitely positive about the prospects.
Awesome. Michele Atsasani, co-founder of Face It. Guys, again, you owe a lot to a guy like this. We keep the infrastructure going, the esports can continue to grow. Michele, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Yep. Again,
you're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We'll be right back with more from NAB.
Thanks again to Mikola for his time. For full interviews, visit our website over at checkpointxp.com. Listen, we want to hear from you. Have you been enjoying our NAB coverage? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, Joe sits down and talks with Adam Mayhill, Creative Director for Unity Technologies. Stick around. That fascinating conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on ESPN Radio 1300 AM in New Haven, Connecticut, as well as Fox Sports 910 AM in Richmond, Virginia. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got a ton of new emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one but two cat emotes. Tali and Fritz, our actual cats, are now Twitch emotes, and there's only one place to get them. It's over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. Well, out in Las Vegas at the NAB show, Joe and Norris are getting the opportunity to sit down with some of the minds behind what shapes our experiences in gaming. One such person, Adam Mayhill, the creative director of Unity, gave Joe some time with this interview.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP. We are here at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Las Vegas, Nevada, in the beautiful Las Vegas Convention Center. Joining me now is Adam Mayhill, the creative director for Made with Unity. Adam, welcome to Checkpoint.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, we have a lot of listeners out there who are newer to the video game space.
Yeah.
Unity is, of course, a legacy brand in the world of gaming. Can you tell people a little bit about Unity and its origins?
Yeah, so Unity is a 3D creation engine, and we work with creators to do everything from create to operate to monetize. We're the largest game engine by many metrics, and we work on everything from the smallest mobile game all the way up to Academy Award-winning films.
So, going a little bit into Unity. A lot of people, when they think about Unity, they think accessibility. They think it's what a lot of the indie developers choose to develop on. Why is Unity rather so easy to get into? Why is it so popular?
Its origins are in gaming, and in gaming of all sizes, and it's easy to use. So the approach that I think a lot of people find when they get into it is they can spend their time working on creative problems and on the game design and on executing on their vision. And hopefully our goal is the least amount of time wrestling around with tech and with problems and pipelines. I mean, we support the most different forms of platforms. So like if a new VR piece comes out or there's a new phone, we've got hundreds of engineers that are working on that very problem. And you hit a button and it'll work on that device.
In mentioning that, I mean, Unity has been absolutely instrumental in the rise of mobile gaming. I'm wondering what kind of challenges come along with, you know, developing for mobile gaming and really for, like you say, for being so ubiquitous, for being able to be used on so many different platforms. How challenging is it to develop that way?
It is. I mean, there's a great diversity in the capability of these devices, right? And it depends how far back you want to go. If you want to support like an iPhone 4 or something versus the latest art that's coming out, there is a really large delta between the processing power of those, you know, those devices. So we approach that. We have systems to handle that. So you can have quality settings, and you can configure your project to, you know, use the lower expense items on the for the cheaper hardware, and then, you know, go full on and turn all your graphics to 11 on the highest one.
So we're coming up on the era of 5G. I mean, it may yet be a year or two out, but it's going to get here eventually.
Yeah.
How do you foresee 5G changing the way the mobile world works, or maybe even, you know, moving off of mobile, maybe talking more about offline tournaments and things like that? How do you foresee 5G changing things with Unity?
It's going to change a lot. It's going to be a really big change. So when you don't have to do the processing power on the device, and you can have machines in the cloud with whatever the craziest video card is running, and the latency between getting that stream to your phone is near zero. So now you can play your game on your phone, but it's not actually running on your phone. It's just streaming video back and forth from a server in the cloud. I mean, that's the whole Google thing that they just announced, right?
I am glad that you mentioned that, because, of course, I'm not going to let you get out of here without talking about that.
Yeah.
Unity was announced as one of the partners for Google Stadia. This, I mean, when you tell people the concept behind Google Stadia, you get one of two reactions. You get, whoa, or you get, that's impossible, there's no way.
There's one more reaction. We've already tried that.
The
industry's tried that.
Right. So, I mean, of course, the industry has tried that, not necessarily with, you know, the overlords of Google behind it. Talk to me about this concept of cloud gaming and why it could actually work.
If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Google, because they just have the infrastructure and the scale and the horsepower and the commitment. So why I'm excited about this is because I think that there's a world where all of this really heavy, not that phones aren't powerful, they are, but like really significantly heavy computational processes are done in the cloud.
Right.
And each phone is a portal to this. But because of 5G, this is a two-way connection, right? And what we're seeing with media is broadcast is not a one-directional thing anymore. I mean, it still is. We're at the NAB show.
Right.
But when you look at things like Bandersnatch, you look at things like esports, $120 million were spent last year on people in Twitch gifting their favorite players.
Don't I know it? Don't you worry.
Right. So we're going to see a game designers designing games where the spectators and the viewers and the casters have a play, and this is a bidirectional stream. So when we have, I'm kind of looping back to your 5G question,
right,
but
yeah.
it's the takeoff point for so many other questions. When we have 5G going and information can come from the viewer, the spectator, and go back, and we have this two-way communication, think of what game designers are going to be able to do, like stuff we can't even imagine. Like we're going to see stuff like, you know, if 100 people vote this way on something and it's going to, a health back will drop, it's going to change the outcome of this, we're going to have like branching narratives, and we're going to have a place where spectators and viewers can really have agency over what they're watching.
So, and one of the big questions that people in the games industry have been struggling with is this idea that, you know what, graphics can only improve for so long. We can only move so many generations of consoles on the concept of like, wow, look how realistic this looks.
Sure.
The point is, we're getting to photorealism. We're very close to it now.
Yeah.
So the idea is like, okay, so what's the next major innovation that's going to sell the next generation of consoles? And I think you're right. Are we looking at maybe interaction being the new dimension?
Yeah. And I mean, it's not really new. I think we're just figuring it out. RTX, real-time ray tracing.
Sure.
We support it. Other game engines support it. In 2 years, hard surfaces, things other than humans are going to look amazing. Things other than humans, I don't think you're going to be able to distinguish them from live-action footage. It's
right.
Going to be that good. So that problem's gone. So making it look amazing, we're past that now.
Right,
we will be. We're very close now. what's going to happen is people want to watch experiences where nobody knows what happens next. Look at the psychology of children, right? Like, kids aren't watching TV shows because they feel that there's no variability. Like, they're not right. actually with the people that are playing, and nobody knows what's going to happen next. So the next generation, the current generation, like the younger people, want to watch experiences that have variability. And you look at the baby boomers, and they're going to, you know, they don't have too long left.
No.
And they're the ones that have cable and are watching this passive media, and it's going to change fast.
Yes.
And we're going to watch things where you as a caster, me as a spectator, are going to have some control over what we're watching, and we're all watching this thing live, just like sports. But
yeah, exactly. Sports. Exactly. And we need to get into this and talk about some of the ramifications for esports. I mean, it's at this point, it's not worth calling it an emerging medium anymore.
No,
it's here.
Totally.
So talking about esports, tell me about Unity's commitment to esports and the growth in that field.
That's something I'm really passionate about. So I've been at Unity for almost 3 years now. Before that, I had a company called Cinemachine Imagery, and what we were doing is we were figuring out how to film variable scenarios and make it look like a movie.
Right.
So virtual camera systems. And my long vision, even back then, is I want to make esports look good. I'd like to increase the watchability of esports. So everybody likes to see it from the player's view, but watching an entire Overwatch tournament from just the different player views is kind of fatiguing. And if you notice, they have, like, you know, a high third-person camera that's an overhead, and that's amazing.
Right.
But imagine if you had an embedded film crew, and they were down there, and they were filming this like a war documentary, on the ground, making intelligent choices about camera, framing, following, edit. That would be a revolution in esports.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what I'm working on. And that's what I want to show you.
But yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to see that. But it's very much like innovations that we've seen happen in traditional sports, where when NFL introduced just the camera on the zip line, effectively,
yeah.
that could take you over the action.
Yeah.
But esports presents a much wider array of possibilities because it exists in a virtual space.
Totally.
So I'm wondering, like, I had a conversation not long ago where we got to talk a little bit about virtual reality and this idea that one day, what if you could be in Summoner's Rift? What if you could put on a helmet and be there?
Right.
So I'm wondering, like, what's the ceiling at this point for, like, what? Where are we trying to get to?
So I work in this every day, and I don't know.
It's reasonable.
So that's an honest answer. But what I do know is that if I can give game designers an environment where they can spool up 50,000 intelligent cameras, and I can give casters like you the ability to have an AI system boil that down to the 20 best shots and different cameras of different styles, and this one's always following battles and that one's always following player one or whatever the game is, and you as a caster can switch between these very high-level camera notions, and automatically we can make a movie out of a game in real time, then I think people are going to do amazing things with it.
Yeah, because as long as esports have existed, one of the fundamental problems has been a lack of communication between the camera person and the caster. I mean, I think when we watch competitive PUBG or any
yeah.
battle royale game, there's so much going on at any one time. It's impossible for any human
yes.
to just be everywhere they need to be, covering every storyline.
Totally.
It sounds like there might be a solution here.
Well, yeah, and we have this. I mean, I'm giving a talk at 4. I'd like to show you in person.
Sure.
We have this technology called Cinecast, and if you, for any of the viewers who want to check it out, just Google Unity Cinecast. I don't know where the games are going, but I know that if we could give people really powerful tools to present these experiences, then we're all better for it.
So, obviously, Cinecast is one of them. Is there anything else coming up in Unity in the next year or so that maybe you can tease for us?
Well, we've announced this thing called DOTS.
Okay.
And that stands for Data-Oriented Tech Stack. And it's a new way of programming. It's like a modification of the C# programming language. And it makes things run ridiculously quickly. We have a demo on the iPhone where it's running 500,000 objects at 60 frames a second.
Wow.
It's really, really quite crazy. The performance gains are out of control. We put it into the camera system, and I spooled up 500,000 active cameras doing raycast evaluation and a damped following.
Yeah.
Before this, I could run like 50, and then you'd see the performance things.
And you see the lag, yeah.
We're running 50,000 at 250 frames a second. And for giggles, I just sent it to 500,000, like 500,000. And the laptop did kind of like groan.
And then like, it went, what are you doing to me, man?
And
okay.
Yeah, and it was 4 frames a second, which, I mean, you'd never use 500,000.
Right.
But if you think in a game like PUBG, you got, you know, 50 players. Each player might have 4 handheld cameramen following them. The reason why you do 4 is so you always, when you're in your narrative, you always have a camera to cut to that's not across the director line.
Right.
So then you've got, say, a few thousand in the world, maybe a few hundred virtual drone cameras. You get into the thousands of cameras really quickly.
Right.
So we want to make this so you can put it into any Unity game and there's no overhead for it.
That's amazing. Adam Myhill, creative director for Unity, has been our guest today. Adam, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Adam of Unity Technologies for giving us a moment of his time. Listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint _ XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as our growing collection of podcasts and interviews. Make sure to tune in tomorrow as we'll be continuing our coverage of NAB 2019. And join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. I want to thank my crew, lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, producing and booking help from Christine Solis. Big thanks to Sarah Skopik over at the Checkpoint News Desk, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Abe Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.